If you're a regular listener to ACB Radio Mainstream, then the name Brian Hartgen will be a familiar one. Brian, of course, hosts the popular InfoTech program here at ACB Radio, but he also does a number of other computer-related activities, including producing tutorials. Well, Brian's about to release a new tutorial, and he comes on the program to tell us about it now. Welcome, Brian.
Well, thank you, Jonathan, for letting me come on to Main Menu. I've just released a tutorial, or should I say it's actually going to be released in at the beginning of December this year, but I'm doing some publicity on it now. And it's entitled The VIP's Guide to the Internet. I actually produced it in response to customer requests, really, because I've produced other tutorials in the past, and people seem to like the way that I explain things and teach concepts. And what happened was a lot of people who purchased those tutorials actually wrote to me by email, particularly asking for a tutorial on web browsing. So that's really first and foremost how it's come about. But also I find the internet a very fascinating place. It's great for blind people, as I'm sure you'll agree. Not only do we have access to information, which is great, but we also have the independence of shopping online, and also audio content as well. Stations like ACB Radio, you wouldn't be able to listen to a station abroad a few years ago with the clarity that you can now hear ACB Radio. The only way you'd be able to do that in the past would be through a shortwave radio. So the internet has made all that possible. And often, though, unfortunately, the cost of training for visually impaired people is very expensive. So that's really how the tutorial has come into being, this latest one in the series.
Just to be clear, the internet can be divided into a number of categories, such as email and FTP and IRC and instant messaging and goodness knows what else, but is this focusing on web-based content?
Absolutely, that's the next note I've got. You must be reading my little script. it entirely focuses upon Internet Explorer. It does use straightforward plain language, obviously, throughout, so it's suitable for people who are just starting out, and I can explain some of the terminology that's actually used through browsing the web. But hopefully people who are used to basic web page navigation, for instance, will get something out of it as well. But yes, it does entirely focus on the use of Internet Explorer.
How is the tutorial organized? Have you got it structured into a series of lessons?
Yeah, it's divided into 21 chapters. If I could just take you through briefly some of the structure.
Sure.
I say structure, but I have presented it in a very conversational way. So hopefully the user will feel like I'm just coming into their house in a normal training session and just sitting there talking to them and guiding the user through the various exercises. We'll begin with some introductory comments. For example, I explain what you need to get on the World Wide Web, how you start web browsing, and internet service providers we talk a little bit about. Then I talk about creating a shortcut key to launch Internet Explorer. I don't know about you, Jonathan, but I'm a great fan of shortcut keys to launch particular applications.
Oh, me too. I'd be lost without my Control-Alt-I to get into Internet Explorer.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we focus on that. I feel that's important, that people get onto the web as quickly as possible. Then we talk about basic web page navigation. And then there's a whole chapter on what I've called screen reading considerations and benefits. I think the problem with producing this tutorial has been the different ways in which the different screen readers actually cope with web access, and maybe I'll come back to that in a minute. But then we talk about more advanced navigation, and I simulate some problems that people might that people might find on the web, because obviously people can encounter a problem and they think, oh, is it something I've done? That's the first thought that people think. So I simulate something like the 404 error, the page cannot be displayed, etc., so that people can hear that, and I explain why that kind of thing happens and it's not their fault. Then we talk about bookmarking sites in the favorites, And then I talk about form completion. We go through a couple of forms and look at the radio buttons and check boxes and the normal things that you might be confronted with. Then there's a series of chapters looking at sites containing useful information, and we learn about search engines and that kind of thing. Then there's three chapters on shopping in depth. I not only explain the background to it, but we actually go ahead and make some real purchases on the internet as well. Then there's two chapters on audio content, and we wrap it up with some final thoughts about things like hit counters and getting the latest version of Internet Explorer. So there's quite a broad range of topics there.
You mentioned that you were working with a number of screen readers, and I would like to talk to you some more about experiences that you found with different screen readers and whether you have a view as to which one at present is surfing the web best. But how has it been possible for you to construct this tutorial so that it's not too screen reader specific? Because these days it seems to me that screen readers almost have their own proprietary interface to Internet Explorer.
You're absolutely right, and this was a major problem for me, and this is why, I mean, tutorials, as you know, Jonathan, they take quite a while to actually put together in the normal course of events, but when you've got these difficulties, it's actually taken, I would say, months of work to thoroughly compile this. It is difficult, and what I've done, as I say, I've introduced this chapter at a fairly early stage called Screen Reading Considerations and Benefits. And I actually talk in some depth there about the different ways in which the screen readers that I'm demonstrating actually do perform on the internet. And there are problems even with individual screen readers themselves, because if you remember perhaps a year or more ago, Jonathan, and let's take JAWS for Windows, for instance. I mean, you had a situation where there were certain commands, even within that screen reader, that are conflicting with later versions. For instance, I think it was in about version 3.2 of JFW, you had commands that were introduced that were specific to Internet Explorer 4.01, such as the ability to actually reformat a page. You needed to execute a keystroke in order to get that to happen. I'm sure you'll remember that. But now we have the virtual cursor. So there are completely different concepts, if you like, even within the individual screen reader itself. Now, WindowEyes has taken it's an easier command structure to explain, if you like, because from version 3.1 to 4, yes, there is a speed issue in terms of the accessibility of web pages up until if you use that version 4.0 in conjunction with Internet Explorer 5.5, but the command structure has basically remained the same. So you can use the same kind of commands with using Internet Explorer 3 that you can with Internet Explorer 5.5 on the whole. But then HAL for Windows takes a completely different role here, because there are things that HAL doesn't really allow you to do, in all honesty. For instance, there's a certain procedure that you have to go through to set it up properly so that you're notified about whether links are on a page or not. By default, HAL doesn't actually read out, it doesn't tell you whether there is a link on a page or what is a link in context, for instance. So the only way that you can actually get it to do that is to tell you the different attribute changes, so that when there's underline text, it will announce an underline character. So a lot of links are underlined, and that helps. So what I've done in that area is I've demonstrated how you would set HAL up in that regard, how you would create a settings file. But throughout the tutorial, what I've tried to do is say, well, this is how you would actually do it with JAWS for Windows and WindowEyes. And where there's considerable differences, I've tried to demonstrate it with HAL. but I haven't demonstrated everything with all three screen readers because I would have been there for 27 hours instead of 9. But I've really tried where possible, and I've listened to the whole thing, and I've made corrections, and I've really, you know, put a lot of effort into it to ensure that as many screen readers as possible are covered. And obviously, I've detailed the various Microsoft shortcut keys. But yes, it has been, you know, really quite a difficult task.
And then, of course, you have the little buglets or lacking of features or something, depending on whether you're talking to a user or a developer. For example, I don't know about you, but I'm a huge fan of context menus. And one of the problems with JFW's virtual cursor is that if you tab to a link and then try and invoke a context menu so you can copy the URL of the link you've got focus on to the clipboard or save the link or something like that, add it to the favorites, JFW does not bring up the context menu for the link. It brings up the context menu for the entire page. So that's a bit of a frustration.
It's a great frustration, and I really can't understand any kind of logic behind that, really. But what I've tried to do is obviously do as much research as possible, and I've obviously made people aware of that kind of thing. And it's worth saying as well that this particular tutorial, what I've tried to do is cross-reference it fairly well. So obviously, going back to this chapter 4, this screen reading chapter, I obviously talk about like the JAWS Forms mode or the MSAA mode in WindowEyes. And I don't say, for instance, we'll be talking about forms a little later on in this tutorial. I'm more specific than that, and I say, well, we talk about forms in chapters 8 and 9, so that people have actually got a direct reference point to what it is that they're looking for.
Let me ask you, one of the questions that I get asked a lot, and I'm sure you do too, and it comes up on email lists and turns into a little mini cyber riot, as to which screen reader is the best. And I wonder, in the context of the internet, having done all this work with three of them, WindowEyes, JAWS and HAL, have you come to a view as to which screen reader performs best on the web from those three and which performs the poorest?
Well, I'm going to get shot, but I think, really, from a teaching point of view, I would say that WindowEyes is probably the better of the screen readers. It seems to me that it does load, particularly if you use Internet Explorer 5.5 and WindowEyes 4.0, it does provide, as I've said earlier, a great accessibility in terms of the transferring info web pages from the web itself to your computer. I mean, there's really great speed there. But also, as I said, this command structure is very easy to teach to people. There's a lot of keystrokes in JAWS for Windows that it seems that I had difficulty sometimes in getting my head around it. And I'm sure that new users to the internet, obviously they want it to be as easy to use as possible. Now, JAWS provides excellent internet support, but I would say that WindowEyes sort of excels a little bit in that area. And to be totally honest, I really don't think HAL for Windows is in there, really, unfortunately, because, as I said, there are lots of problems. Not only with the links issue that I mentioned earlier on, but also if you actually want to browse through a page a little like a word processor document, you've got to go into navigation mode with shift and space. You possibly have to invoke the column detection mode with control and figure 9. You may have to unrestrict navigation mode with the numeric keypad plus a couple of times. And then you can only actually read the whole screen full of information. If you want to read a succeeding screen full, you have to escape out of navigation mode, press the page down key, go back into navigation mode, and so on and so on. It seems to me that it's a complete nightmare.
Of course, the solution that you've
provided this tutorial for does involve quite a bit of expenditure, and perhaps not necessarily on behalf of the blind person if they're fortunate enough to have an agency or an employer get this equipment for them. But I suppose there may be an argument that says the cheapest option, the most effective option for those who just want good internet access, is a browser that's blindness specific, such as PW WebSpeak or IBM Homepage Reader. But they're really not covered in this tutorial, right?
That's right. Obviously, it's taken six tapes, as it is, to explain the different areas that I wanted to. And there is indeed a perhaps call for a second volume of this sometime next year. And I'd like to talk to you about plans for tutorials in the future, if I may, a bit later. No, it doesn't actually cover those areas at all. They're two excellent web browsers, they really are, and I've certainly reviewed the PW WebSpeak on Infotech in the past, but they're not covered here, no.
One has to stop somewhere.
Absolutely, yeah. And obviously, what I wanted to concentrate on is obviously the thing that visually impaired people really want to do with their computers is invariably they want to write letters for a start. They want to have a word processor so that they can keep their private affairs in order. And for that, obviously, they would need a screen reader to facilitate access to the word processor. So the next step forward, obviously, is to have a screen reader which will facilitate access to the web and email as well. So I would suggest that using Internet Explorer would serve a larger group of the visually impaired community.
Can I just tease out the target market a bit more? For example, would people who have become proficient with their computers to the extent that they've been able to download Winamp or Real Player and tune into ACB Radio, is there still something in this tutorial for them?
I would certainly hope so. What I've tried to do is, even in the basic chapters, I've perhaps introduced some perhaps little tricks, some shortcut keys, which some people, however experienced they are, they may not have come across them.
Yeah.
But also,
I was just going to say, you know, you can really wow people at parties by by telling them that you can press Control D to add the current page to the favorites. It's amazing how many people don't know that.
Absolutely right, and that's one of the ones that's covered, so I'm glad you mentioned that. But the other thing which seems to be a bit of a difficult or controversial area, certainly over here in the UK at the moment, is shopping on the internet. There are agencies who are actually saying that shopping on the internet is just not possible, really, for blind people. It's not the enjoyable and independent experience that it should be. Now, I don't subscribe to that view at all. I think it's a really positive experience. And you can actually purchase things online within a reasonable period of time if you actually get to perhaps know some of the advanced features of your screen reader and the concepts behind what you need to do in order to purchase things online. Because essentially, all the shopping sites require the same information. They might be presented a bit differently, but as far as inputting data is concerned, they're essentially the same. So I don't believe in that, and I think that shopping is a really positive experience for blind people, and that's why I've spent quite a bit of time detailing shopping sites and going through the procedure that you would use to purchase things. So I think even for the experienced users, there would be something in there that would hopefully whet the appetite a little bit.
Well, obviously, streaming media aside, which we're both enthusiastic about, I found when I work with clients that the three things that really does that really do get people excited are banking over the internet because of the privacy factors, not having to have a volunteer read your visa statement to you and that kind of thing, shopping over the internet, and suddenly being given access to all the newspaper material that you couldn't access independently before.
That's absolutely right, yeah, it really is. The fact that we can have access to all this information, I mean, yeah, Braille is really great, and I'm an extremely fluent Braille reader, and I wouldn't be without it, but you can't get a Braille copy of the Wall Street Journal or the Daily Telegraph. It just isn't possible. So to get those kinds of things, access to newspapers and magazines on the web, is a really good thing. And as you've said, we're shopping there. That's really important, and banking. Now, I come back to the point earlier where I said that that there may be a call for another volume of this, because we haven't really covered banking too much, and we haven't talked about buying groceries online either. We've concentrated on perhaps other things that visually impaired people might be interested in purchasing. So, as you said, you have to stop somewhere, but I think there's a lot of potential there for a bit more work to be done.
So let's talk turkey, as it were. How much is this tutorial selling for, and where can one get it from?
Okay, it's actually selling for £45, which is about $68. Okay, but the price might seem actually quite high, but obviously I feel that that it's got to be costed properly, as well as the good quality cassettes that the tutorial is on. There's also the packaging, obviously, and that they've got to be labelled correctly and so on. There's a couple of things that I did want to focus on very quickly, and then I'll give the contact details. The first is that I wanted to make this as easy to use for people as possible, this tutorial, and I do realise that some people will want to perhaps follow along with some of the websites that I'm demonstrating. So what I've actually done is, rather than actually provide an additional disk for people to install onto their computer, because I realise that might be a little bit difficult for people to do, I've actually created a bit a dummy website, if you like, a custom-built website that people can go to, and they're given the URL at the beginning of the tutorial. And obviously, it's really, it works well with all the screen readers that I've got, and it provides links to all the sites that are mentioned throughout. And there is also a screen reading area with details about mailing lists you can join and that kind of thing. But also, particularly with the forms exercise that I detailed earlier, I thought that may be a bit tricky. So what I did, I actually wrote a form, created a form that containing radio buttons, checkboxes, and edit fields, for instance, that people can just have a play around with, and they can actually fill it in, practice filling it in, listen to what their screen reader has to say about tabbing to each field, for instance. And they won't be manipulating and sending information to anybody else. So that's the website. The other thing is that the tutorial is also available on CD-ROM as well. There's nothing magical about this CD-ROM. It just contains all the chapters in the form of MP3 files, but it does provide a useful way of actually referencing the tutorial. Now, while I've made sure that the cassettes are fully tone indexed, of course, and there's the contents at the beginning of each cassette and so on as to what's on it, it struck me that really people might want to be a bit more user-friendly with the referencing. So, for instance, on the CD, if you wanted to find out more information about shopping, you would go to the shopping file. If you wanted to listen to information about audio content, you'd select that chapter. So it's a lot easier to actually do that. So as I say, it's actually available from Computer Room Services. They are the sole dealers for it, if you like. And their telephone number is 01438, or if you're calling outside the UK, I think that's 441438,
yep.
742286. There's a lot of details on my website. I've taken quite a bit of care over that. www.hartgen.org. If you actually select there's an obvious link from the home page, and you can not only read about it there, you can listen to the introduction in audio, you can download it to your computer, and you can view the text version of the full contents and listen to an ad there. So there's quite a bit of material there.
Now, can people order this online from Computer Room Services?
I knew you were going to ask me that. And the answer is no, not at the moment, but I would hope that obviously, you know, if there was a lot of demand, either Computer Room Services would do something about that very quickly, or I would do something about it quite quickly, because I've taken advantage of credit card ordering myself, and I would, you know, strongly hope that that would be the case.
And, of course, we are living in the I want it now instant internet generation, and it seems to me that if you are making these tutorials available in MP3 format, might it be possible for people to order online and then download the tutorial?
I would really hope that that would be possible. I'd love for that to happen. I've got to get my head around the complexities of that, because building a web page is actually a very new experience for me. I'd not done it really until, I don't know, about 2 or 3 months ago. And I'd not created MP3 files until about April or May of this year. So I'm up to speed on that now, but I've got to get round the logistics, if you like, of getting credit card ordering sorted out, and also making things available for download, obviously password protecting. I've got a bit of a steep learning curve to go before I actually get to that. But you know, that's me being honest about it. My field has never really been in computing at all, and I think that's why I'm able to present this material in straightforward, plain language, because, you know, often this is a learning experience for me as well as it is for the user. So, yeah, that is my hope, most certainly. And, you know, if I can battle that learning curve, if I can get to grips with it, I'm sure that that's a realistic possibility.
Your press release indicated that you were seeking feedback from users as to what they would like you to produce in the coming year.
That's right, Jonathan. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I've got a rough timetable about some of the tutorials that I've been perhaps asked for the next 5 or 6 months or so. For instance, in February, January or February time, I'll be re-updating and re-recording to some extent my tutorial on teaching basic Windows concepts, and also the tutorial focusing upon Microsoft Word, okay, which was really quite extensive and has received quite a bit of praise. But there's been some advance in the screen reading technology since that was recorded, and there's been Office 2000 as well. So I want to get that sorted out. But also I've been asked for tutorials on things like Eudora, that seems to be quite a popular one, Outlook Express, and certainly Microsoft Excel as well. So I don't really see, I believe in setting realistic targets for things, and I don't see why they can't all be available by the summer of 2001. Okay, so that's the kind of time scale that we're actually looking at. But yes, very much, I'm looking to seek the views of customers, really, potential customers and the visually impaired people themselves, obviously being one myself. And I want to do that in two ways. The first way is obviously if people are feeling that they really want a tutorial on a certain issue, then I'm more than willing to accept requests and suggestions, anything at all really. You know, you're the people that really matter out there, and I need to listen to what you're thinking. So I'd like to hear from you. You can drop me an email at any time. The email address is Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at Hartgen, H-A-R-T-G-E-N, .org. Now, the other way that we want to address this, and I've been discussing this with Steve Nutt of Computer Room Services, and we both feel that this is a good idea, because it seems but it's a debatable issue, really, but it seems that I'm not allowed to tell people on mailing lists about the existence of the tutorials because it's construed as being advertising. Now, that, as I say, it's a debatable point because mailing lists, especially of a general blindness, computer-related nature, you know, we're all there to help each other, really, and quite obviously, this is a service which actually maximizes visually impaired people's computing skills. So, the fact is we're not actually allowed to do that, it would seem. So, the idea that we've actually come up with is that we'll set up our own tutorials mailing list. And this will be a discussion list which will be, you know, fairly strictly moderated. I want it to stay on the right guidelines. But it will be a discussion list where people can feed to us ideas about what they want in the course of tutorials, what format they'd like them in, how they'd like to buy them, what sort of price they should be, and that kind of thing. And I think that would be really the way forward. Now, whether they would that mailing list would just be restricted to my tutorials, or whether we would broaden that out, I'm not really sure about that, and we need to be sorting that out. But it will be a reality within the next few days, that I can assure you.
Well, that's excellent. And I should say that I think there is some degree of variation depending on the list owner on this subject. I know that some people have a religious policy that says that every advertising of a product is spam, but you'll be most welcome to post on the Blind Tech list about your tutorials, because the way I feel about it is it's legitimate information in the blindness market. If people are on a blindness technology list, it's not unreasonable for people to be told about blindness technology assistance that's available.
Well, that's how I feel about it, and thanks ever so much for that, Jonathan. I really do appreciate it, because this weekend I've had my wrist severely slapped for advertising, so-called, this kind of material on mailing lists. And I don't really think it's on for the reasons that I've said. So if anyone would like to know more information about the mailing list, as I say, in a few days it should happen. Again, drop me an email to brian@hartgen.org, and I can always put your name forward to the mailing list as and when it actually happens.
Well, congratulations. I wish you all the very best with the product, and I know that you would have put a lot of work into this in terms of the research and the editing and putting it all together. It is not an easy task, and I'm sure that you'll really assist a lot of people with the product, and we'll look forward to talking to you again about future tutorials.
Well, thanks very much, Jonathan. I really do hope it goes a long way to assisting visually impaired people, because that's what it's all about, really. That's what ACB Radio Mainstream is all about, and that's what the mailing lists are about, and the tutorials as well. We all need to help each other, really. We're all in the same boat. So I really do hope that it does benefit as many people who care to buy it, really.